The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening, everyone. This is Sports Talk 1240. That's right, folks. Guess who's back? Raymond Unqua, here for an hour.
I'm letting him point. It's a lot more fun that way.
For an hour today, the Dynamic Duel is back, fresh and ready to go. We got a lot to discuss, of course, today because, well, besides the Knicks, we had to discuss this because it's only fair because it happened last week that we had to talk about the Super Bowl.
And to be fair, while Bill Donahue was holding it down yearly, as he usually does on Super Bowl Sunday, the game was not decided while we were on air. So this is your freshest Sports Talk 1240 take, and you should absorb said take and run with it.
Yeah, you should. Well, let me start off with this. Well, you know, Sunday I had a good morning. You know, I went to a roundtable discussion for a movie of United Kingdom, which should be coming on theater soon. Talked to a lot of actors and actresses. Woke up really early. Ate some breakfast there at least. Then I came home. You know, 6 hours from now, Super Bowl, and excited, a little long pregame show that they do every year, every Sunday on that Super Bowl. Well, getting all the chips, you know, the beer and all that stuff, et cetera, because, you know, you got to get all that for the party, Super Bowl party. Came in.
Okay.
That was telling everybody, you know, I was going to win by double digits. I just felt like, you know, offense they have more offense than them. They got to kill the clock more, most likely. Coming to this game, you know, the game started. It was first quarter. 0-0. I was like, you know, this might be favor over the Patriots right now because this is a close game. It's a low-scoring game. It might be good for them because it's a team that's pretty good. Number one scoring defense in the league. It's number one scoring offense in the league. Then second quarter, Falcons just exploded. I thought the pick from Brady was just like the game was over. It's 21-0. The course Patriots score three. And then, you know, the Gaga halftime performance.
She was okay.
Yeah, it was okay.
She was okay.
You know, shout out to my girlfriend. She loves Lady Gaga, so she loved that performance and all that. But
I hope you're listening, Ayanna.
Yeah.
You won't stop talking about you.
Yeah. So then third quarter happened. And then I was like, you know what? Falcons score on this possession, 28-3. And, you know, the game's over. Everybody's just going to play the little board games and Super Bowl parties. Don't forget about the game. You see Malcolm Butler get his ankle broken for a meme for like most of the time on Twitter. Everybody just shared that.
And if we're going to talk about memes, we have to go into Tom Brady chasing down after the pick six.
And then had his head down after that on the bench and everything. So then goes now Tom Brady doing what he does best. It was 28-9 heading into the fourth quarter. And then in the back of my head, I was talking to my friends, Kevin, if he's hearing the show, and other people at my brother's party. I was like, yo, I'm nervous, man. And he's like, yo, I'm nervous too. Because, you know, because he always does this. You know, Brady always does this. I was like, I'm getting nervous. I'm like, oh, God, here we go. Brady scores. It's 28-12. And, you know, the Brady scores. It's just 28-22 point conversion. The same play that they use against the Carolina Panthers. Anybody pay attention in the Super Bowl that they won the second one in? Use the same exact 2-point conversion play. Identical. Literally, the fake running back in. I mean, that game.
The direct snap.
Yeah, that game was 27-22. They needed two to go up by seven. Of course, they went to a field goal for that Super Bowl and they won it. But this one, it was 28-20. Then the Falcons were marching down the field. Oh my God, it's like Matt Ryan was on a roll right now. You know, he's getting his throw to Julio Jones, winning a terrific catch. 23-yard line. In the back of my head, I'm saying to myself, they got this. You know, they just run the ball, kill clock, get a field goal, you're up by two possessions. But then, for some reason, they want to be all fancy like the Seattle Seahawks, pass the ball, they get sacked. And they try to go again, they got a hold. Then they have to punt the ball. Brady gets the ball back. And then, you know, what happens next? They tie it up. Overtime, coin toss, la, la, la. You know what happened after the overtime. We all know. Everybody know. The whole world knew when they got the coin toss, the game was over. They went down the field. And that's it. And Brady's champ.
So I'm going to assume that your day ended badly, yes?
Yeah, it did end bad because I was excited. I was like, oh, you know, if I was going to win by double digits, you know, a little celebration here. This is the worst loss Patriots ever had in Super Bowl history, la, 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 all that. Bill Belichick faced probably the best offense he's ever faced in Super Bowl, and I thought they were going to lose. And then they come back, and then you say to yourself, man, this franchise, this team, they represent something that no other franchise represents, which is they never give up, and they're always in these situations where they don't panic, and it's because of great coaching and also a great player who's resistance to whatever it takes to win a game, and it's just incredible to see that. I respect that, but I also disliked it because they were Boston.
You know, at approximately, no, actually, check that. At exactly 9:26 p.m.
Yeah.
If you follow me on Twitter, at @N_AS_SAM_ONNancyYE, figured I'd be as specific as possible. This very sentence left my fingers. There is way too much time left on this clock. And by this time, the Patriots had the ball, driving now with 11 minutes to go. Still a 19-point game.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And I don't understand it, to be quite honest with you. You had the game. That's what I don't understand at this point. Because if you're Atlanta and you're Kyle Shanahan, what spurred the Falcons offensively in the first half? Was Matt Ryan doing what Matt Ryan does? Yes, absolutely. But they also ran the ball. And something tells me that after Tevin Coleman went down with that injury late in the third quarter, all of a sudden Shanahan was afraid to run the ball. Which didn't make sense because Devonta Freeman literally opened the Super Bowl with a 32-yard run.
Yeah, first play of the Super Bowl.
The first play of the Super Bowl. And they ran the ball five times the whole second half. With a backfield that combined for over 1,500 yards, they decided to run the ball five times when they had the lead. The game was theirs. And Kyle Shanahan found three separate opportunities to say, here you go. I can't stand anything about New England. I'm a born and bred New Yorker. It is what it is. If you don't like it, I don't really care. But Tom Brady made himself into the greatest quarterback of all time with that drive. And I threw up a little bit in my mouth just saying that. And I will never forgive Atlanta for this. Never.
But listen, man.
Never.
I think it all started, though, with the fact that when coaches, for some reason, when they get up against the Patriots, that they start to do these fancy, creative, out-of-the-world plays to say, oh, I made that play, and no one else did it.
Right? I think that's a very good point because it got away from doing the basics.
The fundamentals.
Listen, coaches talk about it a lot, and people think that they're full of it. I am telling you. When it gets down to the nitty-gritty, the fundamentals win games. There's a reason everybody does it, because it works. There's a reason why teams with the lead run the ball, because it works. There's a reason why your quarterback can take the fourth quarter off when he's up by three possessions, because it works. And in a three-possession game, you gave now the greatest quarterback of all time an opportunity to tie the game. For no reason.
Exactly.
You take the air out of the ball. You kick one field goal, the game's over. You kick one field goal, the game's over. Especially after New England opened the quarter kicking a field goal.
And it's not like they had a bad running game either. The Falcons have two good running backs. So it's not like you don't have, no offense to Giants fans here, you don't have Rashad Jennings out there who's not as good as both of them.
No, don't even say no offense to Giants fans, because if Giants fans had Devonta Freeman, they wouldn't want Rashad Jennings either.
Or at least a good line.
Let's keep it a full stack here. Atlanta choked away the game in the most Falcons-y way possible. Only they, not even the Jets, can pull this off. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine having Jets fans go, wow, thank God that wasn't us?
Because if it was, I'll be in bed for a month.
Can you imagine Browns fans who barely avoided an 0-16 season going, wow, that wasn't us? That's what Atlanta just did. Atlanta made themselves so bad that every city with NFL futility said, man, I would hate to be Atlanta.
Well, I got this question for you then. What is worse, though, blowing this or was Seattle blowing that game? Literally could have ran the ball in that fourth quarter.
That's a really good question.
Because I say the Falcons is the worst one because you're up big. And I don't care if your defense was ranked 27th in the league in the season. You're up big. your offense should be capable of running the ball, literally running out the clock, so then Brady doesn't have any time. Even if he had like 2 minutes with an 11-point game, you know he's probably going to score maybe one touchdown, probably try to get the onside kick, but the Falcons would get it anyway and end the game.
And that'd be the game. You're absolutely right. And I think it's interesting that we go back to the parallel with the Seattle game again, if only because of questionable play calling.
Two coaches. One coach who's been in both teams, Dan Quinn, defensive coordinator of Seattle, and now Falcons head coach.
Man.
And you would have thought that he would think in his head, like, I've been in a situation before against the Patriots. But then I'm like, oh, no, you know what? I'm going to just do a career play like Pete Carroll will be. He'll be so proud of me.
There's a lot going on. And especially since Dan Quinn is, quote, a defensive head coach, he probably handed the reins to Kyle Shanahan and said, do what you do. And that's what a good – and I think that's what a good head coach does in that situation, because he got you this far. You're not going to take the ball, you're not going to take the reins out of his hands now. But to go back to answering your original question, which is worth blowing the big lead or not running it in at the two-yard line, as much as we all want to say, I'm not letting Daryl Bevell off the hook, by the way. That's the offensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks. I'm not letting him off the hook. But I will say that that ball's at the two-yard line. Anything can happen. There is no guarantee. We can call it an 80-90% chance that they're going to score that touchdown. We can say that. But anything can happen within those 2 yard lines.
True.
Here, it's as concrete as it could be. You have a 25-point lead in the second half. You have a 19-point lead, a three-possession game for your fourth quarter. And you blow it?
That's unbelievable.
And you blow it?
Biggest comeback in Super Bowl history.
And to all, what makes this worse, the reason why Cleveland fans, the reason why even San Diego fans, who unfortunately lost their teams because the NFL's the NFL, even the San Diego fans are going, wow, at least we're not Atlanta. Because you did it against the one team. The one team! Everybody's like, not these dudes again.
Let me give you a stat here, because there's a lot of facts here that we're going to present during the show. But here's one. The Falcons' win probability peaked at greater than 99.5% following Julian Edelman's incomplete pass in the third quarter.
They were Josh McDaniels was pulling out trick plays.
Yeah, literally.
Down 25. And you lost the game!
Literally.
The Patriots could not find the end zone if they were on the one-inch line for the first three quarters of this game.
It's crazy, man. It's unbelievable. Really. Like, I mean, literally, this guy, Brady, in the fourth quarter and the Super Bowl, the past two Super Bowls, fourth quarter overtime, 34-42 for 370 yards, three touchdowns, and no interception with a QBR of 93.7. 93.7.
I couldn't even be at the end of the day, I was upset, but I couldn't even be mad. I was like,
I gotta respect Brady, though.
Tom Brady, I can't believe I'm singing this man's praises right now, but it's a brave new world. It's 2017, alternative facts are a thing, so I guess me praising Tom Brady had to happen at some point. My man lost the first four games of his season to a commissioner who I think, without a doubt, is the worst of the four major leagues as far as commissioners go in terms of how he handles players and how he handles controversy.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady lost four games of this season to that suspension. Came back, did what he does, and took three possessions in the fourth quarter of the biggest game in the world. Because, get this understood, everyone loves March Madness.
Yeah.
Most people will watch the NBA Finals. Even people that say they don't love baseball will tune in to at least one game of the World Series.
Or a playoffs, at least.
But everyone and their mother watches the Super Bowl. I don't care what you say. Your girlfriend could not know a single mascot in the NFL. Your grandfather may only regard football as the sport that Pelé, Maradona, and Lionel Messi play. They were going to watch the Super Bowl. And on that stage, Tom Brady showed out. He was so good. The moment the Patriots won that toss, the game was over.
Yeah, we knew it. That defense was gassed out. I mean, that's what you can say about the Falcons defense. They were gassed out.
And let's talk more about that. And again, this goes back to the management, or rather the lack thereof, of Kyle Shanahan. Of course your defense is going to be gassed, because you never gave them any time to recover.
Also, they're playing man-to-man most of the game. I mean, at some point, you got to play zone.
No, you go with what works. You go with what works. And if man-to-man got you a 19-point, I'm going to... I should get that tattooed on my arm, 19-point fourth-quarter lead. But if it's working most of the game, there's no reason to ever go against it. There really isn't. But any good offense in the NFL knows that even the best defenses need time to rest. The Legion of Boom was so dominant in that stretch when the Seahawks won the Super Bowl because Russell Wilson could keep that clock moving. He could win the time of possession game to give the defense a chance to show out for maybe 2-3 minutes max and then chill. But nope. Atlanta was hurried. Atlanta was out of it. And Atlanta was severely outcoached.
Not only they were outcoached, they were outplayed in the second half. Everything that Belichick and Brady done, it was unbelievable. But you also make it seem like they stick to the fundamentals of the game. They don't do anything that's flashy or creative.
Those trick plays.
Besides that. Brady was pretty much throwing short passes the whole game. Pretty much, they didn't run the ball anymore. It was just Brady throwing. And that's why he completed 43 of 62 passes in that game. And he had 466 yards. And he had 3 touchdowns. And yes, I remember those stats because those are big time stats. Those are all time Super Bowl records. Are you kidding me?
Like, you, if you're the Patriots, you would never go. I wouldn't run the ball either.
Yeah, that didn't work.
I don't care if you give me prime LT in the backfield. If Tom Brady's under center, I say, Tom, throw that. Like, it's not even a question. So, this is all to say that Atlanta has actually topped the power rankings for worst NFL city.
That's incredible.
They've done that.
Maybe the worst city in sports.
Stop.
Besides the Braves, what else can they be happy about?
I'm not trying to pile on them anymore.
I'm not trying to pile on them, but when the next day you see an attendance sheet, which is on Twitter, by the way, of students saying, I was not here because technical difficulties, homesick, all these excuses after the Super Bowl. I mean, at some point you got to say to yourself, oh my goodness, man. If that was us, I'll be out for like a month. You will not hear me for a month.
Again, the one time the Jets fans say, man, that's not us. Thank God. You know something's wrong.
I would think that reminded me, though, in that game, the Super Bowl, the fourth quarter, Julian Edelman made the craziest catch we've ever seen. It was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as well. And I look at that play, and I say to Patriots fans now, they can't say that they're lucky, because that was the luckiest catch they've ever made following Super Bowl history.
I agree.
Goes above David Tyree and the Giants. This is three people.
Listen.
Three people.
You have, now it's impossible to put the Patriots and the best too far from each other in any sentence regarding them. Because that play in itself, I can't believe I'm saying what I'm about to say. But the Patriots are so good because of focus and plays like that. Any layman would have seen that and go, oh, crap, they would be playing hot potato with the ball.
Are they so focused, Julian Edelman, that whole play?
Julian Edelman said, that's the ball? Bet. And in between three people, it was him and the ball.
Unbelievable.
That's laser-sharp focus, which is coached, and that's also something that he strived for. Like, there's nothing left to say. Nothing anymore.
only thing I can say is you got to give credit where credit is due. The Patriots are probably one of the best teams in NFL history as far as being a dynasty and what they have done, because not a lot of teams could have done this. I mean, you see the way that they pick players, right? And most of the players that they pick are people that are hardworking, you know, tough, mentally tough, never give up. Belichick picked these players. And it's funny how they pick the receivers, because you see receivers that are probably shorter than 6 feet, most of them. And there's a reason why they do that, so they can get calls. You ever notice that?
Ding, 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 ding. Why does he have to be so smart? Just why? But anyway, when we talked this week, there was a list that you put together, sir.
Yep.
Of the most memorable all-time dynasties in sports. Do we have time to rank them? I think we have a little time to rank them.
Yeah, we have time for the break, yeah.
So, this is a good list. Because we have the Patriots. Off top, I can't give them the number one spot. Off top, I cannot. Only because the time period... And this is, when we talk about the Patriots, we're talking about from their first Super Bowl in 2001 right now to 2017. That's five Super Bowls in 16 seasons. Already that ratio is, it's a little big. Because that's a really long stretch of time.
Well, let me ask you this, though. Since people want to know what dynasty really is in sports, let's look at dynasty overall.
Mm-hmm.
A powerful group or family that maintains its position for a considerable time. Now, probably in politics, you can say the Clintons of the world. You can say...
Maybe even the Bushes of the world.
The Bushes of the world.
Father and son, but in the White House.
Trump, most likely.
Don't you dare!
Well, I'm just saying...
We're not doing that today.
I'm just saying, in terms of that...
Move on.
Okay, well, the sports... For sports dynasties, a team or individual that dominates their sport or league for an extended length of time. So, we have this list.
That's why the Patriots are on there. Because even when they don't win, they do dominate their league. All right.
They have dominated from 2001 to 2017.
Why am I singing this team's Atlanta, this is all your fault! Damn, Atlanta!
Well, look at this one. They got to try away a bounce back, and that will be the biggest bounce back that we're going
to
find.
We're here to talk about good teams. We don't care.
Well, the Falcons had a good season. I mean, Matt Ryan MVP. I know they did.
We're here to talk about dynasty, not almost has been.
Speaking of which, MVPs are only 8 now in the Super Bowl. So if I were you, an NFL player, I don't want to win the MVP if I have a great year. You know, just give it to somebody else. I don't want an MVP at all.
Even Brady won the MVP.
And he's lost.
In the 19-1 season.
Well, the 18, yeah, 18-1 season.
18-1, excuse me.
And he lost. So that's what I'm saying. You don't want to be MVP.
It sucks to be you.
Well, check out all these dynasties. You look at the Chicago Blackhawks, was 2010 to 2015, just recently. Three Stanley Cups in 5 seasons.
True.
Dallas Cowboys, 1992, 1995. The 3 Super Bowl titles, the Troy Aikmans, Michael Smiths.
Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith.
Emmitt Smith, yeah. And he has San Antonio Spurs. We all remember that. I mean, we've been there. We've done that. Tim Duncan, Greg Popovich, five titles. New England Patriots, we already discussed it. 5 Super Bowl titles with 2 coaches. 25th win all-time postseason history, too. Los Angeles Lakers in the 80s with 5 with Johnson. In the 2000s, 5 with Bryant. Then look at the Yankees, 4 World Series in 5 seasons from 1996 to 2000. Could have had 2001 if, Rivera didn't blow that. But, in that story. Yeah. The Chicago Bulls, 1991 to 98, of course, 6 titles. And it could have made a case for probably 8 straight. Jordan didn't retire. We never know that for sure. The 49ers, of course, Joe Montana, 81 to 89. Only in 8 years, they have 4 Super Bowls. Unbelievable. And these are big-time dynasties in sports.
So let's rank them. Part of this is a homer call, but also it's the only three-peat in baseball history, so the New York Yankees have to be first. I don't care.
But they also had a 5-peat, too, back in the 50s, 40s.
See, but again, I think we kind of discussed this for 5 seconds. If we're going to rank these dynasties, I think the time periods are really important.
So Yankees number one?
I would do Yankees number one.
I think it's short too.
It is short, but it was very dominant. Because if even then, if you want to extend the time period,
2009.
Nah, that's too far. I would go 96 to 2004.
Well, that's true. They made it to two more World Series, even though they mm-hmm. lost. And 2004 was probably the worst year.
You know. But if we're gonna, but let's be fair about it, because they were amazing in the league that year.
Yeah. So okay, we got the number one then.
Which means we can't avoid it. New England has to be number two.
It has to be because the talent that they have in doing this is with players, but not even that great. I mean, you have players that are from only Gronkowski and Randy Moss. Everybody else is pretty much average. Brady has never played with a guy who's a Hall of Famer like that.
Aside from Randy Moss.
Aside from Randy Moss, but they lost that year and never got back to it. Gronkowski, you know, he had that season where they won against
Seattle. Yeah, I think he's on pace to be the best
tight end. And he could retire right now and probably still be one of the best tight ends.
I agree.
He got two rings. He's so lucky he didn't even play in the Super Bowl and he still got a ring. Unbelievable.
But even though that, again, I hate the fact that you're wacky poetic about this team.
Yeah.
Y'all really don't understand. When you are the fan of a team that is consistently tortured by this team, and you add in the fact that I already have a contestable New York-Boston relationship as it is. Like, some of my best friends are Boston fans, and they've also given me my greatest heartache just from running their mouths. There was no love lost with New England, and I have to sing their praises because Atlanta blew it for everybody. This is crazy. So, I would go Yankees 1, New England 2. I'd go Chicago 3.
Why Chicago 3? You think the Jordan time at that decade was pretty dominant?
I think not only that, but also because when we look at the Lakers, who I think I was going to put the Lakers right below the Bulls, I was going to go Bulls first because even without Jordan, they were the best team. They're
still good.
One of the best teams in the league. Now, the Lakers,
number four,
after their three-peat, Kobe kind of had to lift teams with the likes of Smush Parker as his starting point guard.
Gasol.
Bryant. No. Gasol saved Kobe Bryant. Let's get that straight.
You think Gasol and Bynum saved Kobe Bryant at the time?
I think Gasol more than Bynum, because Bynum was already in the league. He was already seen as a raw prospect, what have you. But Gasol was really the postman that L.A. really needed at the time. Huge upgrade over Chris Mim, for crying out loud. Come on.
Or Kwame Brown.
Don't bring his name up again. Let's move on.
Okay, number four is the Lakers. We already established that. What about number five?
Football hasn't gotten much love here. With that said, I'm going to go 49. I'm going to go 49ers.
All right, number five, we'll put 49ers. And with that said, we'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll finish this list and have Keith from SNY talk about the Knicks and this whole dysfunctional environment with Charles Oakley, even though they won today. And it's just a lot of stuff. You're going to hear our rant today for sure after we talk to him, because that's what we're going to talk about.
That's what we're here for.
All right, thank you.
Listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240. I hope you enjoyed that first half. Second half's going to be better, more emotional. And I will say, I think you'll remember this one for a long time. So let's just get
He's
back.
He's already making it memorable.
Listen. Let's get back to this list. You have number five, San Francisco 49ers.
This is for those of you who are just tuning in and going, who are these morons? I'm of course, Tony. He's Raymond Morris, Sports Talk 1240. After having to sing the praises of one New England Patriots franchise, we've taken the time to rank, in an arbitrary order, certainly up for debate, the best dynasties of the later half of the 20th century.
Yeah, most memorable ones in general.
Because let's face it, if any of you are looking for us to pull out stats about the 1927 Yankees, you're out of luck. It's not going to happen.
So, yeah, we got 49 number five. Now we have left here is the Cowboys, Blackhawks, and Spurs. What will be number six?
We said Blackhawks five, right?
No, we said five 49ers. So, Blackhawks will be six?
Oof.
Or you put Spurs or Cowboys.
I think Spurs. It's unfair that – it's really unfair that hockey slides so far down this list – but their competition is really stiff.
Also, the Islanders back in the 80s, too, they won a couple
series,
too.
I think that would be top four on this list if we included them.
Yeah, we included that.
But to round it out, I would go Spurs, Cowboys, Blackhawks in that order.
All right, Spurs, Cowboys. All right, we got that out of the way. So that's our list here of the all-time dynasties in sports. And you know, you can make a debate about it, but like we said before, a dynasty in sports is a team or individual that dominates their sport or league for an extended period of time. And when people talk about the Patriots dynasty, whether Brady or Belichick wins another Super Bowl championship, since Brady says he wants to play until he's 45, we got to remember them as a team that dominated this decade and even this generation and our generation of a quarterback who never started in high school, who started until his senior year, Michigan, and then when he got his chance in being a sixth-round pick for the Patriots, getting his chance when Bledsoe came off, and it was the Jets who done it. So I wish you could just go back in time and that never happened. But once that happened,
Can you imagine if Drew Bledsoe... I feel like Drew Bledsoe has to be a saint.
Yeah.
Because you can only imagine how many times he has probably heard, that could have been you. That could have been you. That could have been you.
Probably. But we don't know that. I mean, Brady is an individual who's worked hard. I've read the book on Brady versus Manning, and the way this guy prepares himself, the punishment that he went through getting to that job, you know, for the Patriots. Going up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning just to practice his fundamentals and everything. And then the guy is a workhorse. You know, this guy's mindset is he wants to win no matter what. He wants to improve on every given moment, whether it's on the football field or his diet, wanting to play until he's 45. The guy says he's playing better than ever. I mean, every quarterback says that when they get older because they see everything much slower than everybody else. But, I mean... it's more of an inspirational story if he wasn't a Boston guy, but the fact that he's a Boston guy, it kind of hurts it.
Can we move on, please?
I'm just giving you respect.
No,
to Brady.
I know that, but we've reached our quota. I think we've reached our self-imposed quota. I said selfed. I need to take a break.
Well, yeah, let's move on because we have one more team to discuss tonight, and that's the New York Knicks. Let me tell you something about the Knicks right now.
Oh, Lord.
When I heard about the whole Charles Oakley situation and Master Gregorian getting arrested and being on the shows and radio shows this past week, I just have one thing to say to all the Knicks franchise and owners and the managers. What in the heck are you doing? You gotta be kidding me to arrest him on national television, making not only the NBA look bad, but the team look bad. Because right now, these distractions are hurting the team. And yes, they have won today against the Spurs. But who cares about that? The real story is what the team is going to be in the future. Because I got a stat for everybody right here. Under Dolan, they're under 500. Without Dolan, before he got the team, they were over 500. You know what the difference is? You got an owner who's an idiot. He's really an idiot. He doesn't know what to do most of the time. Now he's saying all basketball is interested in Phil Jackson. Well, let me talk about Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson right now is the worst president in NBA right now. He's probably the worst president in NBA history with his sidekick colleague named Kurt Rambis, who suddenly has a job with the team, and he's just as bad as Jackson right now because this team isn't going anywhere. The roster is not good. Porzingis has regressed. Carmelo, I know he wants to get traded right now. He said he doesn't want to get traded, but at some point he might have to trade him. Derrick Rose is lost on the court most of the time because he can't play defense. Noah's injury prone, and that contract looks worse and worse every single day. I mean, it's just a disaster for this team. It's a dysfunctional environment, and I'm tired of it. Knicks fans gotta be tired of this, okay? At some point, the owner has to either hire somebody else, or us Knicks fans, we gotta say the owner needs to sell the team to somebody else.
So, I spent part of my Friday actually listening to the interview that James Dolan had on the Michael K. Show. And if I wanted to hear somebody lie through their teeth for 30 minutes, I would watch a White House press conference run by Sean Spicer. That might have been the most self-serving ounce of airtime I have ever had the displeasure of wasting 30 minutes of my life on. Because for you to infer that Charles Oakley, who is beloved by every NBA peer, by the way, they call him Uncle Oak, for God's sakes. And for you to infer that this man has anger management problems when they go to him for guidance, or here's the best part. James Dolan, a former alcoholic, sort of transposed that little bit onto Charles Oakley. Jason Williams is alive today because Charles Oakley helped them battle alcoholism. So off the rip, that is extremely disrespectful. Extremely. And now you take it back to what happened that Thursday. First off, Raymond and I, from personal experience, we covered the Liberty last year. We know that MSG... security can be a little quick to fire.
Yeah.
So for you to send 9 of those guards to this one man, this one legend, one who doesn't get into any trouble, to shove him out of the arena? Are you kidding me? Like, I don't know what your personal vendetta is against this man. I don't really know what you're doing anymore, to be honest, because I'll give him credit for one thing and one thing alone. He said he wasn't going to be a part of the basketball decisions with Phil Jackson. He wasn't. And the worst of it was when he hired Phil Jackson, we all thought it was a good idea. But hindsight is 20/20. So for you to give a rookie executive that much control and just sort of watch the town burn down? I think that's ridiculous. And as someone who's supposed to be the owner for the team and accountable for the team, I think that's an utter disgrace. I do, because too often in this league, we see coach and GM be the same person. And it's very destructive. There aren't many people who can pull it off, with Greg Popovich being one of them. Because to be coach and GM, you have to look at the present and the future. And a lot of coaches are prisoners of the moment, with good reason, because that's their job on the line every single day. But to make them both into the same person, it's just very tough. So for one to go from coach to GM is already going to be a crazy transition. And you put it in the hands of Phil Jackson, who was removed from coaching and is out of touch with the NBA. I mean, come on, man.
It is. I agree 100%. And, you know, I'm just tired of all this stuff. And, you know, now that, you know, we got the Knicks and everything, this whole situation, it's fair that we talk with Keith from SNY to talk about this situation because I believe he was at the game. Am I correct, Keith?
I was at the game. That's right.
And the whole vibe with Charles Sprewell there and Bernard King and Larry Johnson, wasn't that kind of awkward and also a publicity stunt knowing the situation, what happened on Wednesday and Friday and everybody's radio shows?
Yeah, I mean, it was a total publicity stunt, but here's my take on that, right? I mean, we see Bernard King there pretty often. We see Bill Bradley there pretty often. They're staples at the Garden in their, you know, post-playing days. I think that if Dolan were to have brought Sprewell back today, that would have been a nice gesture to show some remorse, maybe to show some appreciation for a past fan favorite, given what happened with Oakley. That would have been a nice gesture in itself. But, you know, we didn't just have Latrell Sprewell. We had Vin Baker. We had John Wallace. We had Kenny Skywalker. I mean, just one after another, it just became a little much, and it was clear that Dolan was trying to prove a point more so than just, you know, kind of show some remorse for what happened earlier this week.
Keith Itzokwa, happy Sunday to you. I have to ask because it seems like it's been a running theme for this team. One step forward, two steps back. One lineup change here, and they still can't keep it up. Talk about this new lineup and what you saw that was different from them today.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is Jeff Hornacek wants to get a lineup in there that shows some energy, shows some fight, you know, has some hunger. And I think that when you put in a guy like Billy Hernan Gomez in there, this is a guy who's obviously just starting his career. He's got a really, really promising future ahead of him, in my opinion. And he's got that hunger. He knows that he has an opportunity to prove himself. He came in today, 12 points, 9 boards. He was aggressive, really physical, which is exactly what you wanted against that Spurs team. So just that, I mean, you know, Jeff Hornacek threatened a lot of different changes. He could have gone in many different directions, but I think slotting Hernan Gomez in there was a promising start, and it paid off for them.
When we look more and more at this team and the Carmelo Anthony situation, what's your real takeaway on the way A, he's handling the situation, and B, the way that the team is treating him, at least through your eyes?
Well, you know, the one thing that a lot of us forget about athletes, you know, because we're looking at it, and a lot of us are fans, even from the media perspective, we forget sometimes that Carmelo is a human being. He's a person. You have to understand that this affects him just like it would affect any one of us, and, you know, it's frustrating. The guy wants to know what's going to happen or where he's going to go. Obviously, he can kind of control that, but he wants to have a solution just as much as everybody else. That's how I feel about, you know, Carmelo specifically. With regard to the way the team is treating him, you know, Phil Jackson has made some questionable decisions with the way he's tried to communicate, whether it's through media or lack thereof or Twitter or whatever it is. He's made some questionable decisions, and, you know, I don't really think that I would go about it the same way. If he's got something to say to Carmelo, he's got to do it face-to-face and not kind of do it, you know, kind of behind closed doors with his Twitter account.
Yeah, I had a problem with that. You know, this whole Phil Jackson situation, posting Twitter and pretty much just criticizing Carmelo Anthony. I mean, we're not in this generation, or at least his generation, where you usually criticize your best player and suddenly they play better. I mean, this is more of a soft generation if you think about it, because all we know from Barkley's experience criticizing LeBron James gets sensitive to that and fires up with Barkley, and Barkley says that, you know, it's a soft generation because they take everything so personal. But going back to Jackson, what do you think is going to happen by the end of this year? I mean, Dolan said on the show, on one of the radio shows this week, on my Clay show actually, that he's going to stay for the 5 years. But is it possible that he might opt out after the summer?
You know, well, it's obviously possible. I think, you know, Dolan says that he's honoring his commitment. I believe that just because from what we've seen already. You know, from what we know about James Dolan, he's known to meddle. He's known to get too involved. Fans have blamed him, you know, for how much the team has struggled. I think he's taking a lot of joy in just kind of sitting back and letting Phil Jackson, you know, kind of do his thing or not do his thing. And Dolan is able to sit back and say, well, I'm honoring my commitment. I told him I wasn't going to, get involved. And as far as Phil is concerned, I don't see him opting out, only because I think he has too much pride. You know, pride to either, you know, he obviously he wants to win in New York, but also too much pride to say to quit. He's going to play this thing out. You know, they gave him 5 years, and he wants the full five to kind of to right the ship. I still think that Phil wants to do that.
Do you believe, though, that he really wants to trade Carmelo Anthony, knowing that Melo probably doesn't want to get traded, and it's probably lasting this longer than him, knowing that Melo wants to be part of this team moving forward?
Well, I think from a strategic standpoint, you know, with regard to being part of a winning culture, and then also Carmelo Anthony has his personal and professional brand to think about, obviously he thinks that if he were to have outlasted Phil in New York, then they get a fresh start. Then they can kind of do something a little different. However, if I'm Carmelo Anthony, and we all know, you know, that Carmelo Anthony isn't sitting in front of his TV or reading his phone for the latest blogs, having said that, he catches wind of these things. If I'm Carmelo and Dolan says, hey, Phil isn't going anywhere, I've got to explore my options too.
Absolutely. We're talking with Keith Schlosser from SNY's Knicks blog right here on Sports Talk 1240. Moving away from the Carmelo business for just a second, the Knicks, after that 54-win season, there's just been a lot of tumultuous activity going on with going from Glenn Grunwald to Steve Mills, now to Phil Jackson. What do you see that happened really after that huge season that have put the Knicks into the bind that they're in now?
Well, you know, the one thing about that team is there's a reason why they had 54 wins. They did really well in the regular season, and then they fizzled out. The whole thing was they had a lot of old veterans who couldn't last, not just through the regular season, but through the postseason. They had Jason Kidd at the end of his career. Rasheed Wallace went down in December that year. Kurt Thomas, Marcus Camby couldn't even play. So I think the idea that they were so successful, obviously, Knicks fans weren't used to that, and it was refreshing. But moving forward, they would have had to have had like retooled anyway. All of those guys were old; they were going to be gone. And I think that they've failed to recapture since then that good balance between impressive youth and gritty veterans. You know, you look around, and Carmelo Anthony is the veteran of this team. Obviously, you have Joakim Noah, but for the most part, Melo has to step up as that veteran. And I don't really think that he was quite used to that or ready for that. You know, he liked leaning on a guy like Jason Kidd for that veteran presence. And because of that, the Knicks haven't really replaced those guys ever since.
So what kind of impact could that have on somebody like Kristaps Porzingis, who, for all intents and purposes, is next if he isn't already the star, the main acclaim for the Knicks? What then could that impact have on him?
Well, it's a very negative effect. Kristaps Porzingis is 21 years old. If you don't have the veterans around you, and I'm not just, when I say a veteran, I don't, you know, Carmelo's been around, I think it's 12 years now. Mm-hmm. Carmelo's not necessarily the guy who leads or the guy who sets the example. He's not comfortable in that role. He's said as much in recent years. You need to get, When I talk about a veteran, you need to get a future Hall of Famer or a multi-time All-Star, you know, that's kind of ready to sit on the sidelines as a role player. Mentors for Porzingis, the way Melo had in that 54-win season, that's, if the Knicks want to win, they've got to create that balance again. And if they want to have Porzingis be the centerpiece, they've got to surround him with those veterans that he can trust.
Do you think that this whole situation, this whole drama that the Knicks have, this dysfunctional, toxic environment that they've been accustomed to for over 15 years, it's going to affect free agencies?
I think it already does. You know, I think that we've already seen it. I mean, you know, there's Carmelo is a superstar. You know, individually, he's an all-NBA talent. They obviously have Phil Jackson, who, you know, at the beginning of Phil Jackson's tenure, he was supposed to draw guys in. He was this presence, this persona, this, you know, multi-time NBA champion as a player and a coach, and none of that has really seemed to help. You know, I think players around the NBA know the culture of the Knicks and the fact that there's an air of negativity. And this week just proved it. You know, with all this Charles Oakley stuff, we saw LeBron James, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade all speak out on social media. The list goes on. So I think that the reputation of the Knicks is out there.
Is it possible that they can somehow revive their reputation and actually being a decent franchise in the NBA?
Well, in order to do that, you got to figure out what the problem is. You know, what's the piece that you have to remove? Is Carmelo not a winner? Does Phil Jackson not know what he's doing? You know, are they going to be forever plagued because they've got James Dolan owning the team?
No,
I think you have to figure out what the negative piece is and go from there.
So let's say James Dolan calls you tomorrow and says, all right, Keith, you have the keys to the Knicks. What's next?
I trade Carmelo Anthony. I think, like I said, I think Carmelo Anthony is a very special talent, but if it were me, I would have tried to trade Carmelo last summer and build around Porzingis. I think it was a poor decision to kind of keep the short game in mind and get Noah and get Courtney Lee, pay Lance Thomas. I think they should have built for the future, so that's what I would be doing.
What about Derrick Rose? The Derrick Rose experiment hasn't really gone as planned. My opinion going into it was that you have three guys who need the ball to be effective, and that, in my opinion, is even too many for any successful team, because that ball ends up sticking to somebody's hands. So what would be your answer in terms of maybe not even re-signing Derrick Rose, but who would be best suited to fill his role in the point guard position?
I really like Drew Holiday. I mean, I know there's a lot of speculation with regard to Drew's free agency this coming summer. I think he would be a really good fit. I think he moves the ball. I think he's still relatively young. They can get him at a decent rate. And they've got his brother Justin already on this team. So I think there's a lot of reasons for there to be a union there. With regard to Derrick Rose, I didn't mind the deal because it's kind of like one of those, you know, low-risk, high-reward-like moves. Like you said, Rose is going to be expiring at the end of this year. If it didn't work out, at least you have the flexibility to start fresh.
Well, I guess we'll ask you this last question before we let you go. Knicks are basically, they're 23-33. They're still actually in the playoff hunt. Is it even necessary for them to even try to make a playoff spot, or by the trading deadline, to just try to trade pieces away, including Carmelo, to, you know, rebuild for the future?
I think either way you have to build for the future, whether that's prepare, you know, here's the thing with Carmelo Anthony. You're either going to trade him at the trading deadline and then perhaps seek other moves as well to get some of your other veterans that you're invested in out of New York. You know, that way you could build towards the future and kind of plan towards a future pick. On the flip side, if you move past the deadline and you keep Carmelo, the only reason to do that is because you think you're going to have more options come the summer with regard to getting him out. So I think the future is where the Knicks need to look.
All right. Perfect. Thanks, Kate, for being on the show. We'll be in contact, of course, as the season goes by. We'll hopefully by next month we'll figure out where exactly the Knicks are going to be in their situation.
Thank you, Keith.
Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, have a good night. So that's a lot of stuff from Keith, and I agree with most of his points that if I were owner, I would trade Carmelo. And it's not more of a, well, he's impactful with the team. It's just more of a business decision. It's not really going anywhere. We're trying to help you out with another championship in another way. I know you want to win it here, but there's other destinations we could win as well.
I mean, Carmelo Anthony gets more flack, I think, than any big name that we've seen in our following the team. Especially since he said from day one he wants to win a championship here. And he stuck by that. Because he's not the one calling trying to force a trade. And this sounds crazy for most people, but I honestly think that the Knicks can win a championship with Melo and Porzingis, but the problem with Melo now could present itself into being a problem for Porzingis later, and it's that they didn't put the right pieces around either one of them.
I agree with that.
Because my thing is this. We always hear about how Carmelo Anthony is a great facilitator and a playmaker, quote, when he wants to be. You can talk about the Denver years all you want. He only really had one good team once, and they went to the Western Conference Finals.
Yep.
In this case, I think if you're the front office and you could get him in a room and say, listen, you want to win a chip here, we get it. We need you to take a seat back. And that goes into – that's both a coaching and a front office flaw, in my opinion, because – you have to let him know, listen, we want you to be here. I know you want to be here, but there are changes that we need you to make. And if Carmelo Anthony recaptured even a part of what he is in the Olympics in terms of the way he plays, I think the Knicks would be a different team. But it's tough to do that when Derrick Rose always needs the ball, when Porzingis doesn't get the right touches at the right time and ends up having to force, and you have guys off the bench just gunning for no reason. Nobody actually wants to facilitate an offense for the Knicks, which is why very rarely on days like today, you'll actually get a win.
Do you think that today's window is a step in the right direction or just like, meh?
It's a placebo. I don't believe anything that this team puts out.
Me neither.
Nothing. If they win six straight, then maybe we'll talk. But right now, it's nobody cares. At least I don't.
It's just this toxic, this functionality that this franchise has endured for many years, and it's heartbreaking. And these losses that they had this season were heartbreaking as well. I mean, that Wednesday really was what the franchise is about, being dysfunctional, as I said before throughout the night. And the fact that they still haven't figured it out, I mean, at some point, you might have to boycott the team, because that's the only way they're going to figure out and say to themselves, hey, we need to do something about this.
I have not spent money going to MSG. I refuse to do it.
I
don't care.
I don't think I could do it anymore. I think I'm done with this. It's just too much, man. It really is. And the fact that they started to figure it out, it's just sad. It really is sad.
Like, straight up, if you're going to take my hard-earned money, if you are going to have the audacity to say that you care about the fan or the media or anything like that, get off your ass and get me a good team.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
For sure, because I'm just getting tired of it. I really am. And the fact that like I said before, this toxic environment, this dysfunctionality, it's heartbreaking. And I might just have to boycott the team, because I'm done with this. I really am.
At any rate, you as the fans, you as our listeners, and we thank you indeed for listening. You can do whatever you want to do, whatever you feel like you need to do. We want to thank Keith Schlosser from SNY's Knicks Blog for joining us tonight. We have Mike Vivallo in the 9 o'clock hour for his show as well. So every Sunday night from 8 to 10 right here on Sports Talk 1240 on 1240 AM on your AM radio dial and also online at AM1240WGBB.com. Special thanks to Brian Graves, our engineer in the studio. And that's all she wrote. We will see you next time here on Sports Talk 1240. Yeah. Good night.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.